Jessica Halverson from, hold on a minute, where are you from? Oh, IPPF in New York. And interestingly, I realized these last three, the first topic, the first talk we had was on Bangladesh, and then the other two in the middle have really been majority Latino, California and New York, and now then this one is born Latino. So please talk about macho approaches in Peru. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Whitaker. If I'm speaking too loud or too quiet, just wave your hand. It's hard for me to hear myself sometimes. So this afternoon, I'm going to be speaking about the experience of one of IPPF's member associations in Peru, which for the past 3 years has implemented an initiative which it calls Macho. This project has strived to motivate men to express themselves more and also to access sexual reproductive health services and information. And it does so through strategies that engage men in questioning traditional concepts of masculinity and at the same time promoting new concepts of masculinity that encourage more sensitivity both to males' own needs as well as that of their partners. A little bit of background, obviously. The other co-panelists have touched on similar themes. I think there are a lot of these issues are kind of cross-cutting, doesn't depend on the context. I think both domestic and internationally it applies. I'm sure most of you are familiar with the concept of machismo. Peru, like a lot of places in Latin America, has very strict and defined gender roles. In particular, Peru has long been a patriarchal society with men predominantly being the head of households and making a lot of the major decisions. And traditional masculinity within Peruvian society dictates that men really separate themselves from anything that could be characterized as feminine. And of course, this extends to sexual reproductive health as well. So there's a process of alienation that happens, and in defining and ascribing to these gender roles, men are less likely to seek out health services as well as information. Not surprisingly, this has ripple effects and has significant health outcomes. Specifically to Peru, there are high rates of gender-based violence. There are also while the surveillance systems are far from adequate, we do know from statistics available from the capital, Lima, that there are certainly pockets of men with extremely high rates of STIs and HIV. So clearly, the gender roles in the traditional society have a big impact on the health of men and their partners. So a little bit of background here. The member association of IPPF in Peru, which is called INPARES, designed a 5-prong approach recognizing the local need that they had. And they used the acronym MACHO, and I've done rough English translation, but I think the major concepts get across in English have some of the same meaning as Spanish. The M stands for mobilize, and this is kind of one of the center points of the initiative, which is to mobilize alliances and networks, both public and private institutions, as well as academic and university facilities, really engaging all the different partners in collaborating around this initiative. The A stands for attend to or to care for men and their partners via the provision of integrated services. I think similar to what some of my colleagues have spoken about. When possible, there was an emphasis on providing male services in male-only spaces. The association is fortunate in that it has a male-only clinic, and so a lot of their services could be provided in that venue. The C stands for communicate. The project focused on defining and developing a communication strategy. In particular, the message really emphasized focus on self-care as well as equality in relationships. The H stands for help sensitize, making sure that providers as well as educators, administrators, and all stakeholders are aware of and sensitive to the issues and needs of men. The O stands for observe, and this implies systematizing both qualitative and quantitative evidence that can help give some more structure and evidence to the traditional concepts of masculinity in Lima. So overall, the MACHO initiative has a vision of improving the integral sexual and reproductive health of men through a vision that's less medicalized, more of a holistic approach, and that emphasizes the components of equality, pleasure, and responsibility. Again, as I mentioned, one of the key components is collaboration. So one of the first steps of the initiative was establishment of a technical committee. This committee meets about every month. It has for the full duration of the project. This includes a diverse range of stakeholders. And they meet together to help plan, design, and inform and assess the project as it goes along. In promoting some of the project messages, the project team has employed a wide use of different types of media, television, newspapers, the internet. They've put out a couple of YouTube videos, as well as radio spots, and this has really helped kind of further disseminate their reach. Another really key component to this project is establishing partnerships with workplaces that are predominantly male-oriented, or predominantly where the workplace is mostly male. So in particular, as you could see in the very first slide I had, they partnered with organizations such as the police, the military, security firms, where a really high percentage of the employees were male, and it was a great way to kind of have the target population to have ready access to them and engage them. So the project team would go into these predominantly male workplaces, and it would be a way of starting this dialogue around issues of masculinity, providing information, education, and sensitization sessions. And oftentimes, they would also bring healthcare providers directly into the workplace. So it would be a great linkage between engaging men in this dialogue, then providing them with some information, and then linking it directly to services. About halfway through the initiative, the project team realized that they were having difficulty reaching certain pockets of men within Lima. And they recognized a pattern that oftentimes these men were from underserved populations, underserved neighborhoods. And so what they did was they employed a mobile unit to go out directly to these communities and provide the information, education services in the community themselves. And that was a great way of engaging men that they wouldn't have been able to capture otherwise. And then, of course, they engaged in public campaigns to promote their services and really get the community to start looking at and addressing these issues of gender and masculinity. This is just an example of one of the IEC materials. This translates into Trapped Without Exit. It was a public forum to address issues of masculinity and gender-based violence. It just gives you a sense of some of the visuals and the messages that they were using. Keep going forward, backward. Okay. I think the primary lesson that the project team in Peru took away was that raising concepts of masculinity and gender really generated great public response and interest. The community was quick to respond, noting that there was an absence of space or dialogue around issues of gender and masculinity, and the society was really quick and eager to talk about these issues. It was happening in a vacuum before. So this proved to be a great entry point for the project, in that by creating spaces where they could have dialogue about issues of gender and masculinity, it was a great way to encourage men to participate in the project, as well as then to access the information and services they might need. Another finding was that the publicized campaigns and subsidized services were helpful in generating clientele. And relatedly, the project team noted that once they were able to kind of catch men for one or two initial services, that oftentimes that clientele had a high retention rate. So they would not just come once or twice for services, but kind of became established clientele. In particular, in regards to the publicized campaigns, one of the ways that the campaigns were really effective, again, in engaging men was not just looking at these issues of gender, but also getting away from a disease prevention approach and looking more at concepts of pleasure and sexual enjoyment and fulfillment as well. Again, the interinstitutional collaboration was essential. It was a way to strengthen the design as well as the reach of the project. It also helped, of course, to maximize resources, and it turns out that it's actually helping to sustain some of the project activities. Once funding is ending, the public sector is actually stepping up and helping to support the continuity of some of these activities. the target outreach, not only to men themselves, but also to their potential partners and families, was also a great way of facilitating better buy-in on the part of the community. And I think this actually also had an additional benefit in that not only was the community more engaged and receptive to this initiative, but at the same time it also facilitated dialogue on an interpersonal and an individual level as well. So it encouraged men and their partners to start talking with one another about issues of gender and equality in relationships. I think kind of the overarching theme that we've taken away from this project is that giving visibility to and creating a space where issues of gender and masculinity can be addressed is, there's certainly a high need for it, and it's also a great way to engage the link between addressing these issues and accessing information and services. Last time. So next steps, as the project has about 6 more months before it wraps up, obviously provision of male-only clinics and gender-sensitive services will remain really a centerpiece of the project. The project team has identified additional male populations that it would like to reach in these last few months. In particular, they would like to work with prison inmates and underserved neighborhoods within Lima that they've not yet reached. Finally, working together with young people is really a critical component of the design of this project. Fortunately, the member association has a really strong youth program, so it's been able to really link together with that work. So a step furthering some of these messages via interventions in schools and communities, getting young volunteers involved, hiring young staff members, really as a way to continue this dialogue and also to establish some steps for greater social change in the future. If you have any other questions, please feel free to email me. I'd also just like to wrap up by saying that IPPF is actually starting from the central office, is really taking on this issue of male involvement, and hopefully we'll be coming out with some publications and new initiatives in that arena in the future. So please stay tuned. Thank you. Thank you.
So I would like to invite any questions, please. Yep.
Thank you. Those are all really good questions. Remind me if I forget one of them. The member association in Peru has, countrywide, it has about 13 clinics. Within Lima metropolitan area, which is the capital, there are about 5 clinics. The male-only clinic happens to be at its headquarters, which is in downtown Lima, but is very accessible by public transportation. I don't have the specific statistics, but off the top of my head, I can say that the male-only clinic, just that one clinic, probably serves about 10 to 15,000 men per year. So they already do have, you know, substantial reputation within the community. Regarding your question about stigma, certainly the project team encountered stigma from the very beginning. In fact, they encountered some internal stigma within their own association as well. So it's been an interesting process. In regards to stigma of men and the uptake of services, one of the advantages of this clinic is that it's not just a sexual reproductive health clinic. While that is kind of its bread and butter, so to speak, men can also get other types of services there. They can get counseling services, they can get some basic medical care. And so I think that's a way that kind of reduces some of the stigma, and it's not an association that's known strictly for its provision of STI services. So that's certainly advantageous in recruiting or reaching more men. Thank you. Evaluation, I forgot really quickly. We're actually in the process of doing the final evaluation, but because the association did partner with a local academic research institution, they have engaged in ongoing evaluation activities. There were several focus groups that took place. There are client exit surveys. And I believe, yeah, that's all I know for now, but there'll be more.
Thank you. That was a very good question. Actually, it was a question I was going to ask, so took it out of my mouth. Anybody else with a question? Or you've thought of a question for another of the presenters? No? So I would just like to summarise, if you'd just spare me a couple of minutes, with the session objectives, because I think you probably have forgotten what they were, but I was going to just repeat them, because I think they're worthwhile repeating. One, I think our Bangladesh project showed us how the community can and should be involved in effective planning for services for men, both in activities and monitoring services and such like that. Then we looked at factors that could influence retention amongst men related to what kind of clinic environment by me, and I think that's a good place that we need to think of more about how we can design clinics to be more welcoming and more able to retain the men that they serve and what kind of services they're going to provide. So community, the clinic, and then we saw some work that looking at what the men themselves felt about particular kinds of services, STD services, so I think that's important as well. If we want to expand reproductive services for men, to really inquire what it is they feel about the services they're getting, what kind of options they would like. And then the last project, to identifying strategies to encourage them to increase their awareness, to bring services to workplaces and such things. I mean, we talked about Peru, but I've seen a similar project about doing this kind of thing in the UK, not just for sexual services, but for all kinds of health monitoring, whether it be diabetes, blood pressure measurements, that sort of thing. Men who think it's too macho ever to worry about their health. That's something their wife worries about. They just go to work and go to sleep and go to the pub and those kind of things. That's their life. That's their life strategy, their life course. And so you have to sometimes remind them or actually bring the health kind of initiatives to the workplace, to the pub, to the clubs, that kind of thing. And we've seen that happen, obviously, of course, a lot, I think, in the gay community. Those kind of initiatives have been done very well. I think we need to expand a little from that. Okay, so hopefully you've had a broad understanding of some of the ways in which we can improve our provision of services. Thank you very much. Have a great afternoon. And thank you to our presenters again. Thank you.
Thank you.
David, how are you doing?
Very well.
Good to see you again. Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm well.
I should have brought a bigger number of them. I give them more away than I expected. Yes, here we are.
Hi, Dr. Whitaker. I'm just checking out the machinery here. I'm going to do the next excuse me, let me step out of here.
No problem.
Look at my nose.
Okay, Paul, so there's your comment. Yeah, we will take a page.
Oh.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so I guess we finish now. Let's have a look. How do we do this? Do I just close this? These don't seem relevant anymore.
No, that's your previous one.
So I don't want to resume it. Do I say other?
Perhaps.